You're listening to Face Off, episode 67, recorded May 2nd, 2010. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes for this episode by going to faceoffshow.com. All right, so let's get into our geek tool this week. No news and follow-ups, no big ones. A lot of stuff going on in the web right now, though.
Yeah, actually, we're going to talk, in our topic, we're going to relate it to kind of what's going on with the whole Apple and Flash and Steve Jobs versus...
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of a big thing, right, is that didn't... So Google announced that they're going to try and get Flash on the Android devices, correct?
Yes. In the next version of Android or whatever, it's going to have full support for 10.1 or whatever, Flash.
But then sort of Apple came out with a retort of...
Why they don't want Flash on the iPad and iPod.
Yeah, and they're very adamantly against it. And it's been a sort of interesting discussion because one of their sort of points was that Flash is a closed system.
Right.
And Apple is sort of, in my opinion, a company notoriously known for having closed systems.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. So, but I mean, we normally don't talk about news because by the time this comes out, we're always, you know, way behind everybody else anyways, and you probably already heard it 10 times, but it's definitely interesting, like, kind of war that's going on.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, even with the security implications, I really think, I think the business reason behind it, obviously, I think Apple doesn't want Flash on the iPad and iPod Touches because then their sort of app market profitability goes way down because there's a lot of apps that were either started as iPod Touch apps that were then, you know, also moved to Flash so other people could get to them, or Flash games that people, you know, converted to the iPod Touch, like the music one I really loved, Auditorium.
Yeah,
that was one that started as a really good Flash game, and then in order to try and really get more money for it, they ported it over to the iPod Touch.
Well, and if you think about it, Flash would, I mean, you could use Flash as a replacement to the whole App Store. You could just bypass it completely. And Apple gets like 30% off.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Like 30% off the sales of the app.
Yeah, totally. So interesting things going on.
So what geek tool do we have this week?
So our geek tool this week, last week we talked about flashlights that were sort of rechargeable for your car, right? You put them in your cigarette lighter, your power outlet in your car, and it would recharge it for you. Well, sometimes, you know, you're not in your car or whatever, so this week we actually have a USB rechargeable LED flashlight.
Yeah, so how many times do you, you know, crawl under your desk and you're, you know, it's dark and you're trying to figure out, I don't know, plug in a new hard drive or whatever, yeah. You're taking off your case. And with this, you have a USB flashlight that's just always, like, plugged into your computer or whatever. You grab it from the back and start flashing around.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one way to use it.
Right, exactly. So you don't have to worry about, you know, putting in new AA batteries or anything like that. It's, you know, it's just only one LED, but it's only like $2.50 too. So, yeah, you know, it's a cheap little flashlight to keep around.
Fully charged, it lasts like 3 hours. So,
So keep it plugged in when you need power. And USB is really showing up everywhere. I mean, we're seeing it now in cars. Like, I have a home theater PC that has USB ports on the front of it. I have an Xbox 360 and a Wii that both have USB ports. So, I mean, there's USB ports everywhere to charge stuff these days.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's great. It's a charger, and you can also transfer data, so it makes sense to have it all in one.
And they're on all kinds of devices, so you can plug these in anywhere to charge it up and have light when you need it. You can get the link for the USB rechargeable LED flashlight by going to our show notes. All right, our web apps this week. The first one is called Check-In Mania, and right now there's this big push for lots of these sort of geolocation apps like GoWalla and Foursquare, where you go to some place and if you have a phone that has GPS with it, you check in there and then you can get badges and stuff for like being the guy that checks in there the most. Well, what's cool about this application is it lets you sort of go to a place on a map, and it uses, you know, sort of a Google Maps mashup. So I can go, you know, to Bozeman where we are today. And then you can click on like Foursquare and you can see all the Foursquare check-ins recently in the area for all the different places. Like someone just checked into, you know, the community food co-op and Staples. But then you can also click and check out like GoWallet, which is another big player in the geolocation sort of check-in market, and see all the different places people are checking in for GoWallet. They're also working on Brightkite integration, which has been one that has been around for a little while, but it hasn't seemed to got as much push as Foursquare and GoWallet. But so that way you can go, you know, anywhere in Google Maps, any town, and see all the stuff that people are checking in. And even like Bozeman, I was surprised to see there's a lot of check-ins here.
Yeah, like Bagelworks, the city courthouse, I'm seeing people. And that's pretty cool.
I don't think you want to check in at the city courthouse. That seems like a bad idea.
Well, maybe you're getting, I don't know, license new license plate
plates or something. Yeah.
That's a good point.
So check it out by going to checkinmania.com. Our other web app that we're going to talk about this week. So for a while now, we've seen, for a long time, they've had these sort of motivational posters where it's like a picture of something and there's like a little saying below it that's supposed to try and motivate you to work harder. And then it almost, you know, almost immediately the internet counteracted with fake motivational posters, which were, you know, sort of making fun of things. Like one of them had a picture of like McDonald's fries, you know, and it says, not everyone can be an astronaut. So, but if you want to make your own, you can go to fakeposters.com. It's a really quick web app. All you do is upload the picture. You give it sort of the title for the thing and then the little saying below, and it'll make a fake motivational poster for you so that you can join all the fun that's been going on the internet with fake motivational posters. Or if you want to make one specifically for work, like, you know, my company, you know, where people kind of try hard and then have fun, you know, you can make a fake motivational poster for just about anything.
Yeah, this is pretty funny. Some of these ones are kind of funny.
Yeah, I'm with an organization called MSU Hive Mind where we have a LAN party, and oftentimes what we do to give away bigger items when we have our LAN parties, because we get donations from companies and give away, is we do like a motivational poster contest, and there's always been some really funny ones submitted for that.
Yeah, you got to see this one. It's pretty funny. It's Bluetooth. This kid doing it wrong.
Wow.
It's got a picture of this guy that's got a phone attached to his head. It says Bluetooth, you're doing it wrong.
That's not Bluetooth headset.
So you can just basically upload a picture and it automatically makes this for you.
Yeah, you just upload the picture, you give it, you know, some parameters like, oh, the image is centered, and then you give it the title and the saying, and it'll make a fake motivational poster for you so you can, you know, show it to friends or print it off and hang it up in your office somewhere. I actually made one once because people in my office, someone or a couple people were drinking all the coffee and not making more. So I took a picture of Terry Tate, the office linebacker.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, like, you know, coffee is like, you kill the Joe, you make some mo. And it was up there for a while. So I really liked it. So check it out, fakeposters.com. If you have some news, a follow-up, or web application you think we should look at, like Mark mentioned, we usually don't sort of go over the hot new news in our news and follow-ups because there's a lot of podcasts out there that do that anyways and usually tend to do a better job of it than we could. But if you have a news item or something that you want to hear our take on or just have us discuss a little bit, let us know. Go to faceoffshow.com/feedback and we will talk about it in the show.
All right. So, well, let's move on to the topics we got this week. We've got an interesting one here. Is HTML5?
HTML5.
So this is like, I don't know, this is like the big news. Like, this is like the dream come true for web developers. People are like, you know, I want the next cool thing now.
So like the current sort of standard is HTML 4.01 or 4.1.
Yeah, and then like XHTML is also
XHTML1. Yeah, I think like HTML 4.4 is... So it came out at the same time as XHTML1, I believe. Right. Those are sort of the two big standards. And then there's like different sets of like when you do doc types, script, like transitionable and stuff. But HTML5 is supposed to be sort of the next evolution of that stuff. So you wouldn't need either one of those. You know, HTML5 is supposed to be XHTML compliant. It sort of follows the same rules as XHTML. So it's supposed to be a really big catch-all for a lot of the problems that we've been having in web development.
Yeah, so it's the next iteration. It's 2010 now, and they started it in 2004, and there's no signs that it's going to be completed anytime soon.
Yeah.
So to give an idea, it's been going on for a little while. It's kind of funny. But it is a spec. Well, I mean, there's a draft of the spec anyways. And so I went ahead and looked at it, and so we got some cool stuff to talk about. New things that are coming and things they're getting rid of.
Because, HTML is an old thing. I mean, it's been around for a long time. And the web especially has really evolved since these early specifications had started out. And so as web developers, and I'm sure as most of us who are out there doing web development know, a lot of times you have to use a lot of hacks to get things to go the way you want. You have to use a lot of JavaScript, or you have to use Flash. And I mean, HTML5 is sort of that next evolution to try and stop it, so we don't have to do these sort of goofy things to get those to work.
Yeah, well, typically HTML has been like a markup language only, and now they've started to implement like backend APIs that we'll talk about that help you do a lot more than just markup.
Yeah.
And displaying just static stuff on the page. Because, you know, originally you got to think of HTML was originally the web was kind of just static pages of stuff. And now we just have very interactive sites.
Yeah,
and
it's definitely changed.
It's kind of, you know, it's becoming out of date, and we're using things like Flash and JavaScript and things to make these sites more interactive. But they're still kind of considered a hack. And so they want to kind of get all that stuff and put it into the actual HTML spec.
Right.
So we don't have to install all this stuff and do like... validate, like, does this person do they support Flash? Do they have the latest version? Do they have this and that?
So. Like, I mean, a really good example is things like audio and video, right? Right now, to do those, you have to, you know, use something like Flash, or I think you can still use technically HTML for like, you know, MIDI files or something. I'm not sure if that's in HTML4 or not, but their HTML5 is trying to say like, okay, we notice these are things that everyone is using on the web. Let's try and make it implement this in the standard so you don't have to use third-party things.
So let's get into things that they're going to be doing in HTML5. We've got the first one that I noticed was the doc type is literally like exclamation doc type space HTML.
Yeah.
Do you? I mean, I do not have any of the ones memorized. I always have to go find some. Like, yeah, Google it basically.
And you're supposed to put like the W3C address at the end.
Yeah, like
and
transitional dash this. You know.
Yeah. So the new doc type is meant to really simplify that. It's just saying now if you say your doc type is HTML, that is saying it's HTML5.
So I mean, finally, people have no excuse not to include the doc type.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I can remember that.
It's always like if I'm doing like a, you know, a site or whatever, I'll make sure I have the doc type. But if I'm just hacking up something real quick, I just put like HTML, head, body, close the HTML, you know.
Yeah.
Like I don't worry about the doc type, but now that it's got it in there, might as well, you know.
Yeah, it's really, and it's like we said, it was a problem. They came out with these doc types, and no one could agree. You know, there wasn't a standard to it, so the doc type declarations right now are really long. You never remember them. If they're not right, then, you know, like your validation sort of complains at you. So you always end up just going and copying, pasting it, Google searching it. And that, I mean, that takes time. It's not the most massive amount of time you've ever spent, but I can remember exclamation point doc type HTML.
Right.
You know, I don't have to look that up. I know it, and I know what it means.
So some of the new things in the actual like markup part of HTML, we'll start with forms. There's actually support, or there's supposed to be support for date and times, actual date and time fields instead of just like a text field.
Right. So right now we put dates and times and in the input type text.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes we'll use like a JavaScript thing when you click in and a little div comes up with a calendar.
Yeah, exactly. But the new, now they're going to actually make those as sort of tags. You say, mm-hmm. you know. Date tag, and right. then knows that that's going to be a date. It may depend on how it displays it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at how it actually displays it, but that's also nice for sort of some semantic reasons. You know, this field is a date. You know,
yeah.
This field
so you'd be like input
time.
Type equals date time or something.
Exactly.
Another one is email, which is kind of nice. Hopefully, I mean, you would think that it should do the validation for like the RFC style email too.
Yeah.
Built in, so you don't have to go and find all that and. We've got URL search. Another big thing with forms, we talked about RESTful APIs a while ago. Put and delete will actually be part of the forms now instead of just get and post.
Yeah.
Because like for the longest time, I thought get and post were the only two things, and put and delete were...
Well, if you just develop on the web with web pages, that's all you have.
Right.
And so right now, things like, you know, like Rails does sort of a hack of it says it puts a field inside of a post call that says method actually equals a put so that you can interact with a RESTful API on the back. I'm not sure if that's sort of like the standard HTML thing or if it's Rails specific, but basically if you want to do a put or delete, you kind of have to hack around it to say, because the browser only does support get and post.
Yeah, so now this would say that the browsers have the ability to do put and delete.
That's great.
The next thing that was kind of cool is placeholder text. So this is like the text that's in a text box that's like kind of grayed out or something usually. It says like search here or something.
Right.
You click it and it disappears and then you're able to type.
Right.
That's what this is. So you no longer have to use like a JavaScript that says like, as soon as I click here, erase everything. Right. And then when I click out, put the other thing back as long as it hasn't changed.
Or yeah, whatever. Exactly. I always use a jQuery plugin for that because it is a pain. And that's nice that this does that for you. Another really cool thing, and some people might be thinking like, well, what do I care if there's actual contextual stuff, you know, for email and stuff in my forms? It works now. Another really cool part is like, well, you'll see this with, the, you know, like the iPhone or the iPod Touch browser is if you click in an email field, it changes what keyboard it shows at the bottom. So if it knows that it's an email field, which it can in HTML5 with this, it knows, you know, by default, it probably should have an at symbol easily accessible. And then it's going to have a .com or .net at the end. So you have that special button. And same with URLs. Like if it knows it's a URL, it knows you're going to need a .com or .net. And so it can sort of customize which keyboard it shows for you to make it easier on mobile devices like that to show around.
That's a good point. Also, in the URL, it could automatically put the HTTP colon or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it knows that already. And then also, certain things like you'll be able to do, and I'm assuming that like with, you know, the new version of CSS that comes out or whatever, you can interact with these elements in special ways. Like with JavaScript, you can, you know, I'm sure there's going to be special interactions for email fields that wouldn't be there for just generic text fields like we have now. So that's really cool because it having that contextual information, knowing that's a date, knowing it's an email URL means that they can put things in, you know, those fields that you can interact with like JavaScript or CSS.
Another interesting feature for like links, you know, links basically, and then also area, they have a new attribute called ping, which is basically when the user clicks on the link, it can ping a specified URL.
Huh.
So you can do more advanced like analytic tracking and set events off when people click.
Cool.
And go somewhere.
Right. So instead of just kind of trying to guess like when they come in and where they came from, it's, you know, sort of like dink. Okay, you know for sure it's an actual callback to the other.
And that would be as simple as doing like ping equals in the URL.
Cool.
A tab index for every element. So not only sometimes you don't always have like forms where, you know, when you're hitting tab and you're filling out a form, sometimes it's not always a form element that you want to tab into.
Right.
And so they allow tab and index on everything now.
Which is cool because a lot of times there's things you might not think that are part of the form that you want people to tab through that you do want them to tab through when they're filling out a form. So this way you can set a tab index on anything.
Another thing is there's going to have specific tags for like geolocation.
Right.
We talked about a web app today that was a geolocation based
kind right.
of web app. And
it's geolocation is getting huge, and as browsers support it, like which I think, you know, I think the new WebKit browser support it and stuff. Like an application can actually ask you, you know, what is your location? And if your device has GPS, then it just depends on how the browser implements it. How does the browser decide your geolocation? But applications can ask for that, and it's really nice that you can sort of. You know, like Twitter recently just sort of added the ability to add location to any tweet on the homepage. It used to be you only did it if you had like a phone with GPS. But now if your browser supports geolocation, it asks you like, hey, can I add your location to this? And you have to add, it's a browser level thing that I have to say, yes, allow this application to get my location. And you can do lots of cool stuff with that.
Some of the things that were removed in the markup are things like center tag, font, because, you know, you're usually apply those styles to a particular
right.
element. And font is like, I mean, I stopped using font a few years ago. Like I haven't used.
No,
font.
I haven't I used mean, font.
That's an old
if
one.
If you use CSS, it's removing the styling from the context of the document. Your HTML should just be the document. It should tell things about it contextually, not
right.
styling wise.
Big. I've never even used that one. Here's a good one. This is interesting too. It's frame and frame set. They're just totally getting rid of frames.
Interesting.
Completely. And which coming along with that is like the no frames. So if you didn't have frames, it would show up, you know,
right.
your browser needs to support frames. But that was interesting to see that they're getting rid of frames.
Yeah.
Maybe they might have a different way to do
it. Well, I'm wondering if there's a new feature. I wonder if there's a new feature coming in that takes over that or something. Yeah, I'm curious.
Because they are.
Because I don't use them either. I don't use frames or iframes or anything. So I really don't know. I wouldn't be.
So apart from the markup, that was kind of like the markup kind of changes, and there's a lot more too. Those are the ones I wanted to kind of highlight. But apart from them, these are like the new backend APIs, the things that are really what's making HTML5, very useful. things like Canvas Element, which is, so that's an element called Canvas, which allows you to do 2D drawing with SVG. So this is basically like Flash games, Flash animations, mm-hmm. things like that you can do right in the HTML.
Yeah. There's been some really cool like HTML5 demos too of like people basically sort of recreating the game, like I think Wolfenstein 3D. Yeah. Basically that sort of low like 2D game where you kind of run around with the keyboard and stuff. Amazing stuff.
Yeah, and there's like WebGL and stuff. I saw they did like Quake or whatever yeah. in the browser. It was nuts. So we've got a demo here. If you click on it, it's like just like these little graphical balls that are floating all over the screen, and you can kind of click them, and they're like little tweets about HTML5. And I tried it on my netbook. It was smooth enough. It worked, so it wasn't like too...
Yeah, this is so cool that they can do this now. I mean, like yeah, it so sort you're, of you're doing it your now, mind. And it's yeah, kind of, it's really cool. It's kind of like...
Yeah, so something like that would typically have to be Flash... I mean, I don't even think you couldn't even do that with any kind of JavaScript. That would have to be
playing music. Music plan.
Gotta get out of there.
So. Yeah, so they're really trying to show off all the cool stuff you can do with HTML5. That's really cool.
So, yeah, I mean, the Canvas element is definitely like for drawing animation and graphics and stuff. And that could be interesting. I don't know. I mean, they could use it for ads and things. You know, they're using Flash for a lot of the ads.
Mm-hmm.
They could probably replace it with that for some of those types of things where it's just a basic animation. You don't want to use like an animated GIF, but like something like that where you want to interact with it with the mouse and have something kind of.
Absolutely. I mean, that looked like a Flash app. I mean, it really did look like a Flash app. That's really cool.
And then one of the great things about Canvas is, and we're going to talk about which browsers support what in a minute, but Canvas is one of those HTML5 things that is pretty much supported on all the browsers now.
Cool.
Another interesting one is timed media playback, and I don't have the demo here, but I'll find it for the show notes. Is there's a demo where you've got two. Basically, it allows you to sync video. Right. So like right now, when you go to a website like YouTube or whatever, well, and then so typically you don't have two videos playing at the same time. But if you did, you would never be able to play those at the exact same time. You'd have to hit like play at the same time or load it when the page loads. But that wouldn't necessarily be in sync either because one of them might before the other one or whatever. Yeah. So now they have timed playbacks. So you can actually set it so the videos will be in sync.
Right, and that's cool because, I mean, I think that's like if it's now an element of HTML, that means I think you can access it via JavaScript and do all that sort of cool stuff with that. Like so.
Oh, good point, because you can actually say at this point of the video, do this. Or
right, or like, you know, exactly. Like you could send a request to two clients at the same time saying play at this point, go. And I mean that, but that's cool. You can, whereas right now, I mean, you're kind of limited to what Flash lets you do to play around with it. But if it's just JavaScript, like anything else now, because it's part of your HTML, that's really cool. You can do a lot of cool stuff with that.
Another major like update to the way we store. So right now we've got like cookies and things. We can store data, persistent data across, you know, like,
right.
Oh, we can detect that you are a returning user because we've got a little cookie on your computer, you know?
Yeah.
Now with the new kind of offline storage thing, they're kind of going with a database. So you can kind of think of it as like SQLite 3. You can actually do SQL queries through like JavaScript on the person's computer, like insert rows and get rows back and things. So you have a lot more than just cookies right now. What is it, like a big giant hash or something usually? It's like a big text.
I'm not sure. Chunk. I know it's basically just a big thing of text, yeah.
So now at least you'll have basically SQL type.
Right, and like, so this is, Google was, you know, really pushing for this. They like this because they got rid of Google Gears, mm-hmm. which used to have to be an application side or an operating system side application or a plugin for your browser to store data locally so you could do things like Gmail offline. And then when you get online, it would sync and send your email. But now they're moving it all to HTML 5. Offline storage, because then you don't need anything. If your browser supports HTML5, it knows how to store and take care of that for you.
Yeah, Gmail is actually a good example of where you'd want to interact with SQL instead of just storing. I mean, you would never be able to store all those emails and stuff in one giant text file. It'd be a mess. Pain. So that's cool. And one thing we should probably mention too is, and we kind of did, is HTML5 is definitely not done or anything. So these things can change, and we're going to talk about how you can keep track of the changes here in a minute too. But document editing, drag and drop. Drag and drop was interesting. You can actually like highlight any area of the page and like drag that to a box or a selected area. You could drag images, text, lists, all kinds of stuff automatically, like built in.
Weird. I wonder.
And they even showed ways where you could take an image in a browser and like move your browser window over or whatever and drag the image onto your desktop.
Oh, cool.
So you no longer have to like right click, copy, save image as.
Okay,
so and go through that whole jazz.
So it's sort of like final. It's sort of like standardizing what happens when you do it with that content on a web page, rather than right now. It's just left up to the browsers and the operating system. Like some browsers, you know, right now I can click an image and drag and drop to my desktop, and depending upon which browser and which operating system, it might go, oh, clearly you want to save that, but this is going to be more formalized now as what actually happens with HTML5.
Yeah, I mean you can do a lot of drag and drop stuff now with JavaScript, but this just puts it in there, so it's nice.
Cool.
So since HTML5 is not done and everything, I mean, you might be saying, well, why are we even talking about it? Well, there are sites that are actually developing HTML5 sites right now because there are some browsers that support it. Like YouTube has an HTML5 complete site. Like you can watch all their videos and everything on YouTube.
Pure HTML5. Yeah.
Why is that important? Well, YouTube's a big site. There's a lot of people using it. That means they have their weight behind it. I mean, obviously Google is, they're behind HTML5. The core editor for HTML5 works for Google, but
yeah, I mean but it's just showing that this isn't something that, you know, is in the ridiculous distant future. I mean, we don't know when it's going to be finalized, but there are big companies right now saying, hey, we need to use this. Like, I know a lot of companies are trying to obviously get off of Flash for things like video because it's a pain.
Yeah, especially video.
Yeah, so, I mean, and like Google's a great example of that company that kind of wants to be able to control things themselves. So they're like, we want to get off Flash, so we want HTML5 to go. And like, you know, YouTube, which is a Google company, is saying, well, here it is. Here, you know. And the more big companies that do that, the more it'll push browsers like Internet Explorer to make sure that they have full HTML5 compatibility.
And Internet Explorer 9 is supposed to. So
yeah, I mean, but even, we'll see, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But that's good. There's good big companies that are behind this so that the spec is going to be. Also, I mean, the more big players that are in it, hopefully that means the more flexible the spec is going to be and the better it is so that we can try and cover a lot of the bases. But then again, sometimes the problem is that they're trying to cover too many bases, and that's maybe what is dragging the spec out a long time, because like I know things like codecs for video have kind of been a stinging point. They're trying to like push it along, but they can't agree on what like formats to support officially.
So sites like National Geographic has like an HTML5 site. Hulu has. There's talks that they're in the process of making one right now because of the iPad. The iPad, as we know, and this is like there's like a war going on right now on the internet. We kind of talk about it in our news and follow ups. Is Apple has refused to put Flash on any of their devices. And so, but they realize that iPad and iPhone and things are these platforms that lots of people are using. And so, you know, National Geographic, Hulu, Netflix, YouTube, they're all like, well, we'll just put our video on HTML5 and then the iPad people can watch it
on
the site. So
that's good. You know, actually, I didn't think about that. I mean, that is, I was always sort of frustrated with Apple because I was like, just listen to your consumers and put Flash on there. But, you know, if that means that they're going to try and other companies are going to try and do more innovative solutions using HTML5, I guess I'm happy with that.
So that leads you to like ask the question, well, what browsers actually support HTML5? Well, you know, Safari on the iPad obviously does. I mean, that's what these companies are targeting a lot of the companies are targeting the iPad because they don't have Flash.
Right.
So Safari, Chrome, which is, so the whole web, any of the WebKit, the newer WebKit stuff, so Chrome and Safari both, Firefox 3.6 and above, IE9 is supposed to have it. We'll see what extent it has it. Opera, and then also the other thing to note is a lot of these support parts of HTML5, but not other parts. And so it's important to go check out this Wikipedia page that kind of shows which parts it does and which ones don't.
Right. Or another website you found called HTML5test.com, you can actually go there with that browser.
Right.
And it will tell you what components of HTML5 it is. Because that's funny. I mean, we say like, you hear it all the time, like, oh, WebKit it supports HTML5.
It's like parts.
But it does. Yeah. And it is a changing spec. So, I mean, if the spec changes, it takes a browser a little while to implement that feature. So something like HTML5test.com tells you what specific HTML5 features your browser supports.
So if you were a web developer and you wanted to kind of use some of these features, like let's say you know your audience is pretty savvy and they're probably running at least Firefox or Chrome, You can use, and you wanted to, you know, use some of these features. You obviously don't want to just put it on there and have the page break because it
right,
trying like, to use a new feature. But
like if YouTube went to full HTML5, you know,
would break for a lot of people.
Exactly. Anyone using, you know, Internet Explorer 8 or Internet Explorer period, it would not work.
So there's this JavaScript library called Modernizer, which allows you to actually detect what features the browser has that is supported. So you could say like, oh, if Canvas is supported, use this HTML5 video instead of Flash.
Right.
Or, you know, whatever you're going to use, the any of these other features like the offline storage or, you know, any of these. So I thought that was interesting, and it looks very full-featured, and it the way it detects it is pretty decent. So
yeah, that's really cool because it's, again, it's you can try and implement some of these things. Or even, you know, if you have the ability, if you do need to just figure out if their browser is HTML5 working. Like if you have a feature that only works in HTML5, yeah. Use a library like this to say, you know, if they try and stuff for it, say, whoa, can't do it. You're going to have to get one of these browsers. And then you can get this sort of cool feature.
Yeah. I mean, this is a fairly safe way to start progressing people into HTML5.
Yeah.
I would say you're fairly safe to use HTML5 sparingly if you use this as more of a complementary feature to your site.
Well, like especially like the new tags, like the new form tags and stuff.
Right.
I'm pretty sure those are safe in almost complementary. Every browser. Yeah.
Whereas if the other if you have like a legacy browser, it's not gonna like break the page. It's just not gonna work like that. Where it puts the placeholder text.
Yeah.
For the form placeholder. It's just something like that.
Right. If it doesn't support that, it probably just won't show the placeholder text. Right. It'll probably still work as a text box.
Right. Exactly. So where do you go from here? You know, if you're going to start using it, maybe try out the Modernizer. You can also check out some demos, html5demos.com. Definitely check out like the canvas, like you were seeing. It looks like Flash or something.
Yeah, it looks great. That's so cool. I mean, it really looks cool. They're doing some really cool stuff with Canvas.
If you want to track the changes, there's a tracker that kind of shows kind of like a Git, like here's a problem and there's comments and what browsers support that particular feature. It's basically kind of like a revision tracker for HTML5. Pretty interesting site. And then this book that I found, Dive Into HTML5. So this diveintohtml5.org, it was written by Mark Pilgrim, which was the guy that did Dive Into Python. It was a free book, open public book. It is like a huge wealth of information about HTML5, how to like detect what things your browser supports, you know, and he mentions to use the Modernizer plugin.
Right.
So basically it's a huge book about like using HTML5. Interesting.
Free.
Yeah, it's definitely, if you're interested in HTML5, you want to play around with it, maybe put some features in your site, check out that book. And then also there's an HTML5 validator. It's still experimental, but this is done by the W3 people. This is typical. It's the same page as the regular validator when you're doing like XHTML validations or whatever. But if you go to more options and select the document type to HTML5 experimental, then you can kind of do...
Right. See how you're doing. See if you're...
Validation.
Yeah, see if you're HTML5 compliant. All right. Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to remind you guys that you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe if you haven't done so yet. You can also leave feedback by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. We'd love to get your emails, your tweets, everything. Let us know. And thanks for listening. We will see you guys next week.